This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 137. I'm waving goodbye to an associate. I may come in tomorrow, donate a little time to the company. I'm not quite where I want to be with a project I'm working on. And I'm thinking over these next couple of weeks that I may just come in on Fridays for a little bit. Donate a little extra time, try to get a little bit ahead. We like being a little bit ahead. So, anyways, but all goes well there. Everybody seems to be happy with progress thus far and happy with the way things are shaping up, so it's good. Sent out all of the beta copies this week for Calling Grumpy Old Prophets Part 1. And so those are all out to the beta readers, and I've given them until December 10th to get back with me. And so obviously I haven't heard from any of them yet. But looking forward to getting all of that, and we'll get that in and then see if we can't get that book finished up and sent to production. And as soon as we get that done, then we're going to turn around and go into beta for Wanting and Waiting, which is parts 2 and part 3. And so in the meantime, though, I am putting together the outline for part 4. And that's going fine. It's always, this is an interesting time in the life of a creative project. I have written books before where it's kind of stream of consciousness. You just have the general idea and you just start writing and you just let it go. And those are fun because you aren't really sure what's going to happen and you can just sort of discover it as it's being written. But with these particular books, it needs to lock into an existing storyline. And so you kind of have to look ahead and see the pieces that are coming up and actually be set for those pieces. So I have to outline these ones. So I haven't quite got the outline all put together, but it's slowly forming up. It's going to be fine. So anyways, I'll be working on that this weekend as well, trying to get that kind of hammered down.
Excuse me.
As to what we're interested in doing there, but it will be fine. Anyways, I'm trying to think if anything else is going on. The Droid Racer goes on sale tomorrow. I've actually kind of had my eye on the Droid Racer as opposed to an iPhone 4S. This is my year to upgrade, so now I'm trying to decide, do I get the 4S, which has a beta version of Siri, which appears to be pretty cool, but it doesn't have the new antennas in it for any of the 4G stuff, or do I go with the tried and true Android phone, which I've had for a while, which of course Android phones have their own little quirks and things, but they nonetheless work. And the new Droid Razer does have the 4G antenna in it. So, decisions. I'm probably going to let it go another week, possibly 2 weeks, and let the dust settle from the Razer launch and see how that goes. And if, you know, that seems to go good. My son-in-law dove into the water and got the iPhone 4S. And so... So I'm waiting to see how that goes with him, and then we'll see. One of the great things about the 4S is Siri, but one of the drawbacks is that it's glass, and you drop it, and it's done. Whereas with the Razer, it's got a Kevlar back and Gorilla Glass on the front, and blah, 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 so we will see. Anyways, I had fully intended to do at least one more chapter on willpower, since we had done so many of them. I'd intended to do one more because I didn't think I was at the end of the book. As it turns out, I had gotten all the way up to the conclusion portion of the book, And there's some good conclusions in there, and it's perfectly fine read and everything, but there really wasn't anything that I could bring my own unique brand of value to. So I thought, we don't need that. I didn't, however, really finish up last week. I saw John, who, by the way, is 15. I didn't really announce that last week when he was on the end of the show. I just looked up and I saw him and he was running down the thing. So, and then he started coming over. So that's why he got on the show last week. But there were things that I had intended to say about that whole thing. And I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was. We were talking about the dieting and the willpower and all that kind of stuff. And I had some things that I wanted to bring around and make a point at the end of it. But I don't know what it was. So, yeah. They had made the point in the book that, you know, if you've got a problem with being overweight, you need to tell yourself that it doesn't have anything to do with willpower, which I don't know that that's quite true. One of the things that I did want to say is that it is absolutely true that when you become overweight and you're overweight for any amount of time, it is very, very difficult to get out from underneath that. But there is also a fairly simple remedy for getting out from underneath that, and that is to eat fresh fruits and fresh vegetables and lean meats. And it's just amazing how a body starts to shed weight if you will eat fresh fruits, fresh vegetables. If you can not eat the meat and just go with nuts and that kind of stuff, it's actually even more amazing. But what the body misinterprets and what the body has trouble calculating is all the stuff that's processed, even cooking and salting and boxing and bottling and all those things. That's really what the body has trouble with. And if you just stick to fresh stuff, it's amazing. Now, do I stick completely to fresh stuff? No. No. I cook my chicken, I cook my vegetables. Sometimes I stir fry them in a pan, blah, 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 blah. But the fact of the matter is, when it comes to the body and extra weight, fresh fruits, fresh vegetables are the key. Absolutely the key. So, anyways, I'm not sure that's what I intended to say last week at the end, but that's that. So, because I had gotten to the conclusion chapter on willpower, and it's good, it's just kind of a recap of what we talked before, I thought that this week I would be moving into Boomerang, but there was an article that I read, and it has just reinforced so many of the things that I have thought and tangentially mentioned on here. But I thought, you know, we should just do a podcast on this. And the article also had a sidebar that I thought was pretty cute. And so this is one of those topical podcasts where if I waited for a while, it wouldn't have near the topicality that it does right now. And that is the divorce of, you guessed it, Kim Kardashian and Chris Humphries? That guy. Whoever he is. First of all, I am so happy that I am not at the level of fame that these poor people are at. I was watching Saturday Night Live, and they were doing a spoof on it. And I mean, it's just like, oh, these poor people. Of course, Kim Kardashian was paid $17.9 million to get married. So there is an upside to it. But boy, with that upside, ugh, what, What comes with it? No, thank you. So I was reading this article. It had caught my eye. And I thought, well, there's an intriguing article. And I thought the lady who had written the article had a lot of interesting things to say. So as soon as I started reading it, I thought, okay, let's go through this and let's chat about this. Because, sorry, I'm still yawning. Because I have for years now talked about the fact that there are two basic lies that the flesh seeks to peddle to the human race. There is one lie that is specifically geared towards men, and there's another lie that is specifically geared towards women. And frankly, society as we know it, both in olden times and now, are based on these two lies. And this article brings out the lie that is specific to women, and then also tangentially brings out the lie that's specific to men. And just to recap, the lie that is specific to men is that women exist to help a man control his sperm count. That's the only reason women exist. That's the lie. The lie that the flesh peddles to women is that men exist solely to take care of a woman and give her everything she wants. So, the name of this article that I saw and that intrigued me was Why Kim Kardashian's Divorce is Good for America and Women. And I thought, well, okay, that's an interesting thing. As a sidebar, though, they did have a very cute, cute little sidebar. And the sidebar was things that have lasted as long or longer than Kim Kardashian's marriage. So they came up with things like the Macarena at number one on the charts, because the Macarena was at number one on the charts for 98 days. So that's lasted longer than Kim Kardashian's marriage. A McDonald's hamburger, if you leave it sitting out, it will take 180 days to decompose. That's longer than Kim Kardashian's marriage. The amount of time Violet from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory chewed on a little piece of gum, 90 days. The time from when Bill Clinton denied having sex with that woman to when he finally admitted that he did indeed have a relationship with Monica Lewinsky that was not appropriate, 211 days. Martha Stewart behind bars, 153 days. Sanjaya's reign on American Idol, 211 days. The amount of time it takes the average American to finalize a divorce, 365 days. Yada yada. The amount of time a random man spent buried alive in order to beat the European world record, 150 days. This guy was buried alive for longer than Kim Kardashian's marriage. Brad Pitt decided he was going to have a beard. He had his beard longer than Kim Kardashian's marriage. It was 180 days, etc., etc. Anyways, so this article talks about this lady's contention of why Kim Kardashian's divorce is good for America and for women. And the first thing she talks about is the fact that all of us pretty much have found out by now, you know, whether it was on Facebook or Twitter or the Entrepreneur Press, that she has filed for divorce a mere 72 days after she got married. Now, I think I read a report lately that now she's having second thoughts, whatever. The reporter, or the person who was writing this article, was contrasting the fact that the news is everywhere that she has filed for divorce, and yet E Entertainment Network still has Kim Kardashian's Fairy Tale Wedding in heavy rotation. The 2-hour special that they paid $15 million. $15 million for the rights to broadcast. They still have it in heavy rotation, showing Chris and Kim babbling about happily ever after. The writer was saying, it's like the Twilight Zone, but with more tools. On one hand, you have the announcement she's getting a divorce, and on the other hand, you have them saying how happy they are together. Yes, and the reason that this woman feels that it's been so good for Americans to see this is because it gives the viewers a chance to see, in her words, how hollow and manipulative reality TV's fairy tale narratives really are. This thing that we call reality TV isn't. There's a very interesting quote that was made by the president of entertainment, E! Entertainment, Susan Kolb. She told the New York Times this, quote, "The program model of television doesn't exactly keep up with the life model of real people." She was justifying her decision to keep airing Kim's Fairy Tale Wedding, but she debunked the main premise of so-called reality TV. It has nothing to do with real life or real people. And she says in this article that that really is a great thing, because there is this disconnect. A disconnect between knowing that they've already filed for divorce and seeing them on TV will help people understand. It gives them concrete proof that these TV, reality TV, is just a fairy tale and it's all a farce. And the reason that's so important is that the author of this article actually spent 10 years and thousands of hours watching these quote-unquote unscripted dating, makeover, and competition lifestyle series. And she wrote this book called Reality Bites Back, The Troubling Truth About Guilty Pleasure TV. And in the book, she documents that reality TV actually has an impact on its viewers. That it convinces them that and persuades them that certain things are true about the world and certain things are the way they are when they shouldn't be that way at all. She has one quote where she says, reality shows don't focus on what it takes to build real relationships. Instead, they're all about persuading women to lower their romantic standards and their calorie intake long enough to con some douchey stranger into slapping a product placement ring on it. She's not too big on these shows, but the fact of the matter is that as people watch these shows, they think, I know this is all fake, but I know it. But when you get this constant stream of what these shows represent, it is inevitable that it begins to shape your worldview. And that's what the woman who wrote this book, Reality Bites Back, this is what she found as she began to interview people. In her words, dating shows in particular portray women as, sorry for the language, as bitchy, catty, and desperate. These shows also tend to exclude intellectual, professionally accomplished women, preferring contestants instead like a bubbly 24-year-old on The Bachelor who promised she'd make the best wife ever because I will be a servant to him. Now, there's nothing wrong with serving each other, but nowhere does the Bible instruct women to just be a doormat for their husband. The lady who wrote the book went on to say, according to a recent Girl Scout survey of 1,100 girls, young women who regularly watch reality TV are more likely than non-viewers to accept and expect a higher level of drama, aggression, and bullying in their lives. They're also significantly more likely to believe, quote, it's the girl's nature to be catty and competitive with each other, that, quote, it's hard for me to trust other girls, and that other girls have to compete for a man's attention. I'm actually getting my mail here. One moment. So what we have on these reality shows is we have the projection of what is the two lies. When you look at shows like The Bachelor, the guy is really looking for who's going to be the best sex partner there and who's going to, you know, put out for him and all those kind of stuff. And the women are doing whatever they can to snare this guy because this means that they'll have fame and they'll get what they want and they'll be taken care of. And the reason I think that these shows wear off on people and wear off on young girls especially and young women is because this plays right into these two lies and the flesh picks it up. I'm backing into my garage. The flesh picks up this business on these shows of showing that, well, see, the guy gets what he wants and he's only going to marry this skinny little girl who really is interested in sex, and then the girl gets what she wants because she's going to be taken care of because she's attractive. Not because she can go out and earn her own money, not because she's an interesting partner to be around with. All that matters is I'm going to be attractive so that I can find the right guy who will then just take care of me. And that's kind of the essence of all these dating reality shows. And in this article, she goes on to say, nowadays, entire series is like TLC's Say Yes to the Dress and My Fair Wedding exists to get women to fixate on the idea that it's normal, even mandatory, for a wedding to cost as much as a down payment for a house. It may have made Kim $17.9 million richer, but that's all part of reality TV's dirty little secret. These shows exist in large part to expand the luxury wedding market. And the author concludes, so I hope E! Continues to run Kim's fairy tale wedding in perpetuity so that every time viewers see her walking down the aisle or promising her ex forever, they'll realize that all reality TV fairy tales are a regressive fantasy. And I gotta say, that sounded pretty good to me. Because if all you're promoting is this union between two people where the guy gets this really attractive, gorgeous woman that is going to be his for whatever he wants to do with, and the woman gets this really attractive guy who's going to take care of her, that's not really how we build strong relationships. It's more, far more than about looks and about how much money you have, such as a show like Joe Millionaire, that just because he's a millionaire, all these women are going to line up because he'll take care of them. It's really obviously about two people building a relationship and growing deeper and deeper in the knowledge of each other as they move through life and being partners with each other. And that kind of relationship is really, really cool. Because it's a relationship that will survive everything. Doesn't really matter what happens to the individual people aside from death. You're in that relationship with that partner and you're going to face life together. And that's a very cool place to be. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.